All right, folks, this is Total Protection, Mr. Hughes, and you're listening to another wrestling podcast. Don't you dare touch that knob.
It's time for another wrestling podcast.
The measuring stick just changed around here, buddy. You're looking at
the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be.
They got the answers. I changed the question.
The cream of the crop.
Nobody does it better.
These are the best in the world, brother. These are the best at what they do.
When we talk about the legends of the sport, there's only two in my book.
Another wrestling podcast.
All right. Welcome to another wrestling podcast. I'm Credo.
And I'm the angry one, Angry Cooter.
And welcome to episode 128. It's a new day, Cooter. It's a new time. It's a new AWP, a new and improved. We can call it probably AWP 2.0. I don't know. we're definitely changing the game a little bit, but we're still having fun doing it pretty much, so.
That's what's important, man. As long as we get to come on here, say our piece, and have a good time, and, you know, give the fans something to listen to, that's what it's all about.
That's it. So thank you for tuning in. And if this is your first time, please take the time out later on and head on over to anotherwrestlingpodcast.com. You'll find all of our links at the top of the site. Click them. You can follow us. You can subscribe to us. You can write us some reviews. Like us, tweet us, whatever. You know, all that stuff's on there. Go to it. It's 2016. You know how to go to a website. Go to it. Click it. Do all that fun stuff. But regardless, you know, Cooter, we're going to have a great show today. We have joining us tonight Mr. Hughes. Do you remember Mr. Hughes? He was the bodyguard for a lot of people. And also pro wrestler. So he's gonna stop by. He's going to be in the AWP studios today. We're also going to talk bodyguards. And, you know, we're going to have to talk about this in a little bit, but there's another WWE pay-per-view or special this weekend. Man, I feel like we just did this last week.
Dude, there's more specials than there are episodes of Raw and SmackDown now, for Christ's sake.
so we're going to have to figure out what we're going to do because, you know, every so often we would talk about a topic and then, you know, hey, oh, there's a pay-per-view this month, so we're going to talk about the pay-per-view, you know, just to spice it up. But now, it's like every 2 weeks or something like that. I'm like, I can't just stop doing this for pay-per-views every week. So we'll have to figure something out about this, man. The tides are changing pretty much, I guess. So
maybe we just stick to the big four and say the rest of you guys got to step your games up. You know, how about that?
There you go. Well, regardless, you know, it was another big week. So let's get right into the week that was. Now, Cooter, Monday Night Raw, like any other show you're going to listen to out there, they're going to tell you everything that happened. We trust that you pretty much watched it, so we don't have to talk about everything that happened. I think let's stick to the biggest things that happened. I think the biggest thing that happened was Sasha Banks has won the Raw Women's Championship again.
Again. It's the second time she's won it on TV, not on a pay-per-view, mind you.
Yes, and, you know, it's almost like they pulled the trigger too soon to where I think they found out that she was injured. She had to get, like, some kind of surgery done to where they thought she was probably going to be out a lot longer. So I figure they just had her, you know, lose it on Raw or whatever, or lose it to Charlotte at the pay-per-view. I forget which it was. But regardless, you know, now we're back to Sasha Banks as the champion. It's like deja vu, man. Same place she won it on Raw. And we're back at square one. She beat Charlotte twice for it. What do you think? I mean, are they trying to, I don't know. I feel like they're trying to cover their tracks a little bit because it's like, they didn't really want her to lose it, but they let her lose it back to Charlotte and then only to win it back from her. I don't know. What are they doing over there with this women's championship?
I have no idea. It drives me nuts. And I don't want to be the guy who sits there and pisses and moans about the booking, but I mean, she just won the belt and then she has to drop it. I think I referred to this last week like it was the Attitude Era, how the world title seemed like it was changing hands every other week on TV, on a pay-per-view, just diminishing what the title is worth, what it means, because if it passes through so many hands, it doesn't seem like there is a champion. It's just, who's holding the belt this week? I'm glad to see that Sasha got the belt, but at the same time, boy, I would have loved to have seen her, like, kind of start from scratch and work her way up.
Yeah.
you know, face like a Nia Jax, which would have been fresh, something we haven't seen. Maybe a rematch with a Bayley for a number one contender type of thing. Or hell, even let Bayley get, you know, a one-on-one shot with Charlotte since she did have that victory against her on Raw. So, I mean, there's a lot of ways they could have played this out. I think they just wanted to stick with their initial decision and put the belt on Sasha since she is so over.
No, that's it. And what's funny is that I feel like they can't do another feud without it going around a women's championship. I feel like, you know, we have this Divas Revolution, this Women's Revolution, yet we don't know how to build another feud outside this championship. I mean, granted, I understand it. You need a women's champion, but at the same time, you have all these girls that are just sitting around not doing much on Raw, and I don't know. It's like we could feud without the belt, you know. We can have another kind of storyline going on. And I guess they have to yet to figure that out on Raw at least.
Yeah, exactly. Because on SmackDown, I mean, we have this program between Nikki Bella and Carmella. And it has nothing to do with the title. It's like a grudge. You know, it's building up that next contender for a title shot. And that's something Raw hasn't done yet. I mean, let me ask you this question. In all honesty, I mean, I know you've always been a Raw guy. I've always been a Raw guy. But yeah. Isn't SmackDown right now, could you agree with me with the statement being that it is the way better show?
I do. I totally agree. And you know what? A part of me is almost like, you know, I think they want us. They wanted it like that. You know what? Hear me out for a second to where, okay, they knew the brand split was coming up. They knew they had to make SmackDown better than what it was because, granted, you know, everybody's just – it was the DVR show. You know, I was always there live watching Raw every week live. SmackDown would be – I'd record it, and whenever I got to it, I'd watch it. Now they've made SmackDown must-see TV in a way just like Raw was to where, man, if I miss it on Tuesday, you know, I want to see what's happening. It's almost to where I feel like if I miss it, I'm missing like Raw in a way. So they definitely have built it up to that must-see TV. And, you know, I'm like I said, I feel like deep down inside me, that's exactly what they wanted. You know what I mean? So I think they're definitely doing what they wanted. And, you know, I don't know, maybe they're not. Maybe they really wanted both shows to be equally good. But yeah, man, right now it's that 2 hour show. I think it's, you know, that extra hour draws a lot of things out and it's not needed. I think a 2 hour program is perfect. 3 hours. It's like, come on, I have a life going on. I can't sit here for like, you know, how many hours of it can I watch this? You know? So
exactly. That's why I was a Hulu watcher. Now that Raw for me is cut down to an hour and a half and SmackDown is an hour 20.
Yeah.
SmackDown, in my opinion, they got the better women's division. It's being, booked better in terms of feuds outside the title, like you said earlier. And the tag division is way better. I mean, teams that weren't getting a chance are getting a chance, and teams on Raw, like the Club, are getting shit on by guys who are chasing non-Hall of Famer tag title reigns.
And that's another point I want to bring up, too. So it's not in our week that was, but this is now it's in the week that was to where, you know, you're having guys like, okay, don't get me wrong, Kevin Owens and Jericho. That's fine. I get what they're doing. But then you have Sheamus and Cesaro after that whole thing we talked about, the best of seven. Now they're teaming. I'll tell you what, man. The tag team championship better not go to a team they just put together. They legitimately have like six other tag teams that have been there that these championships can go on. They dropped the ball with the Club. The Club should have won the championships from the New Day. And, you know, like we said a few shows ago, you know, like they're trying to beat this stupid record or whatever it is and stop it. It's stale. And those championships need to move to another team. And I'll be so pissed off if it goes to, like, Sheamus and Cesaro or Kevin Owens and Jericho. Because I'm like, No, they have like six tag teams they can give it to. Hell, give it to Enzo and Cass for crying out loud. Like,
oh, you just want to see the Shining Stars as the champs, don't you?
Oh, my God. Yo, I'll take that over just putting two guys together. But no, yeah. So that's a whole other show we're going to have to talk about because I'm just very furious about that. But regardless, you know, there's a lot of other things going on. I have to get out of this or I'll talk about it for like 30 minutes here. So.
All right.
So in another world, last week we were talking about how we could have possibly been talking about the end of TNA. They actually had their Bound for Glory show. It was run. They actually did some TV tapings. But we're going around, and like, you know, they always say, take it for a grain of salt. You know, it's just a rumor. But from what I'm hearing is that TNA is going to sell their tape library to the WWE Billy Corgan is going to take over reins of TNA and possibly just, you know, revamp it a little bit. New name, you know, new logos and all that stuff. So a new kind of wrestling happening over there. But the legal part of me is wondering to where if WWE did buy this tape library, there has to be something to where, like, okay, these guys can't be on TV for a certain amount of months. You know what I mean? To where they literally just bought everything they have, in a sense, if that's happening. And now you're going to tell me, okay, the show is going to keep going on with just a different name. So I'm not sure how that's going to work out. But like I said, it's still in the early stages. What are your thoughts on a possible WWE takeover of TNA's library for the past, what, 10-something years that they've been open?
I would love it if they got the library, because you know how they are in terms of these DVDs, documentaries on histories of companies. I mean, some of them are a little shitty. I mean, like, the World Class one they did was okay, not great. The AWA one was okay, not great. And they're always skewed in, you know, how their stories are told about. I mean, TNA is a great story. They have a great history at the beginning. You know, once we started putting the company in the wrong hands, you know, this is what happens. No. You know, how many times did you and I go to the Civic Center, see a TNA show, and guess what I always chanted, ladies and gentlemen? I always chanted from the beginning of the show to the end, Vince is gonna buy you. Vince is gonna buy you. And Credo's elbowing me, Cooter, shut up.
Cooter, you're bringing attention. Come on, man.
Yeah, really. Well, I mean, look. How many years later, I'm right, bitches. I'm right.
That's it, man. You know, it's kind of sad in a way that it's like, you know, after this long, you know, 10-year-plus run, it comes down to this. Because the past 2 years, it's like, okay, they left Spike, and then, you know, they went to another station. And when they went there, they lost all that Spike money. And then not even a year into their new station, that station didn't want them anymore. So they moved over to another station. And then, you know, yada, yada, yada. It seemed like every year they kept moving and moving and nobody wanted them. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do or how this deal works out. Because if they buy that library, there's no way they can just go on TV the next week and just be some other company. Like, there's going to be a loophole with that. So it'll be interesting. I hope they don't put a lot of guys out of work. That'll probably be the downside of all this.
I don't think they're going to do that, Credo. I really don't. I mean, I think if they're going to let Billy Corgan run the company and he has to rebrand it and do all this other stuff. I mean, these guys are under contracts.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're buying the library. You're not buying the company. So, I mean, that's two different things.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens with that. Like I said, it's still early on talks. Something could totally change next week, so we'll keep on track of that. But, Cooter, I got a little surprise for you that just made the rounds today.
A match.
A big match coming up. I think the ink is still drying on the contracts as they speak. Nobody's really announced it except for, you know, the same dirt sheets online or whatever. But it's pretty much going to happen, Cooter. We're going to have Brock Lesnar versus Bill Goldberg 2 at this year's Survivor Series. Can you believe that?
Are you fucking kidding me right now?
It's happening, man. It's in motion. It's in motion right now. So
the shit show of Madison Square Garden, WrestleMania 20, Part 2.
Now, what are your thoughts? Okay, you have this match. Regardless of what you think of Bill Goldberg and Brock Lesnar, technically, these are two legends colliding again. I mean, these guys made names for themselves back in the day, and, you know, Brock's still a beast today, but we have 2.0 happening right here. Brock versus Goldberg. Now, you said it the first time. The first one was a shit show. Now, this one's happening at Survivor Series, not Royal Rumble, not WrestleMania. Why Survivor Series? Why would you think that?
I don't care. That's what drives me nuts about this. Listen, Brock Lesnar back in WrestleMania 20 days, WrestleMania 19, was actually a good wrestler. I love Brock Lesnar, so you guys are going to have to take this with a grain of salt. But at the end of the day, all he does now is suplex, eat, sleep, suplex, repeat, F5, repeat, conquer, repeat. You guys get the drift, all right? He's a lot more limited than what he did when he first started wrestling. And Goldberg is like, what, 50-something?
Yeah, man, he's up there.
Come on. He hasn't had an in-ring match in God knows how long. The last time we saw him was at Citi Field, where he speared Scott Steiner. And you're just like, oh, God, that was so terrible.
And that's the thing. It's going to be the spear versus the suplex, I think. And I have no idea how this turns out, and I'm hoping it's not just a part one. I hope they don't – I mean, well, it's part two now, but I hope that part two doesn't turn into a part three for WrestleMania. So I'm kind of curious why the Survivor Series out of all of them. And the only thing I can go back to is that, you know, I guess they're really trying to show you that it's one of the big four now. So between the Rumble, Mania, SummerSlam, and now Survivor Series, I think they're going to at least try to have these bigger attractions for these shows. And, you know, granted, this could have been saved for Mania, but, you know, hey – I remember when they tried saving Sting for a match, and he, you know, he died pretty quickly in the ring. So I guess they're really trying to really, you know, cash in all their coins as fast as they can before one of these guys get hurt. So I guess maybe that's another reason. Who knows? But like I said, it's going to be interesting, especially to see how these guys are, you know, almost how many years later?
13 years later, yeah. we're getting a Legends match at Survivor Series because, you know what, we've got to find a way to sell a subscription, you know, after every pay-per-view. There has to be a reason to buy a subscription. Like, yep. I get it. It's a business.
Well, you know, regardless, Cooter, there's a big week happening. There's more news coming out. But like I said, hey, that's just some stuff that's happening this week. Speaking of this week, guys, this weekend, Friday night, Northeast Wrestling, our company of companies we have here in the Northeast, they're going to be in Riverhead, New York, the Riot in Riverhead. This Friday night, 8 p.m., you guys can meet Jerry the King Lawler, Mandy Leon, Bull James, the Northeast Wrestling Champion, War King Hansen, TK O'Ryan, Deanna Perrazzo, and more. It's going to happen at the Sulphic Theater. Head over to thesulphictheater.com and hope you guys can go there. But AWP is going to be in the house this Saturday for Destiny Northeast Wrestling at the Bethany Arena. A lot of matches happening up there. One notable match I want to talk about really briefly is The Now. The Now is making their debut over there in Bethany, Connecticut against the Battle Brothers. So they, you know, they've had some run-ins to try to, The Now is trying to show them what they're all about. So The Now, the Poughkeepsie Zone, our home tag team over here, is going to be doing some battle over there. So against the Battle Brothers, but a stat card will be there in the house, guys. For more information, head on over to northeastwrestling.com. You can pick up your tickets online or at the door, and we'll hope to see you this weekend. But stopping by right now, Cooter, in the AWP studio, please, can you welcome him in?
Welcome, Mr. Hughes.
All right, joining me today is a man who has done it all in the world of pro wrestling, from the WWF, WCW, ECW, to training the superstars of tomorrow. Mr. Hughes joins us today. Thank you so much, and how are you doing?
Great to be with you, man. Just sitting here chilling, watching some Andy Griffin.
Great. Now, before we get into it, you'll be appearing with ESS Promotions on October 14th at the Wrestling Universe, on the 15th for Legends of the Ring, and the 16th at the Pro Wrestling World. For more information, head on over to ESSPromotions.com. I must say, though, for the wrestling fans out there who go to all the conventions, all the shows on the Northeast, being able to meet you seems to be a first, at least for me, which is great. So make sure you guys don't miss this opportunity, but tell us about your upcoming appearances, and what are you looking forward to the most?
Well, like I said, you got some upcoming appearances up that way, 14th through the 16th, looking forward to that, and going to Chicago on the 12th, and you know, and they come in, I get bookings all the time, and of course, training guys as well to be professional wrestlers, and of course, you know, I got Heath Slater and Apollo Crews and Moose, and I can go on and on with thousands of guys that I've trained in the world of professional wrestling, and they're doing their thing.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And so, pretty much proud. You know, Heath Slater just won one half of the tag team belts, him and Rhino. So you know, I do teach guys how to do it, no doubt about it.
Definitely. Now, when I was growing up, we traded VHS tapes, then it moved to DVDs, but now with stuff like the WWE Network, fans can watch you anytime on any streaming device, and a lot of other companies have followed suit with the streaming. Has this given new life to superstars of the past? Because, you know, now kids can easily go back and watch your era and as if it was yesterday, which in return, you know, brings out new and younger fans to conventions and wrestling shows. How does that make you feel, knowing that your work, the work you did, lives on forever in this digital age?
Well, it's an awesome season, man. You know, I mean, all that hard work we didn't put in, all these highways and byways we didn't went down, and all these hell holes we didn't wrestle in, you know, and, you know, it all paid off, you know. At least we do, you know, if something was to happen, you know, at least something is left behind for future generations to view. And, of course, you know, the character Mr. Hughes, I haven't pretty much seen anyone try to, you know, some other guys, they'll try to act like other wrestlers, but I haven't seen anybody try to wear the shades and you know, do things that I did in that ring, you know. So it's good that they have old footage. You know, I think WWE's or the network that they have put together, you know, because they have all everything that I ever did as far as wrestling, besides AWA or, you know, Puerto Rico or any other, you know, outside territory that they didn't buy. It's all on the network of me. So anything you want to find on Mr. Hughes, you can just go to the network, and there it is.
Definitely. Now, if we could take a step back a little bit, you were trained in professional wrestling under Sonny Myers and Bob Geigel. What can you tell us about your training and learning from these two?
Well, you know, when I was in high school, Bob Geigel, at the time he was the NWA president, you know, and the booker. He was the main guy. That, you know, so if you were somebody, you came through Kansas City. So most all the stars, you know, if you were somebody, you came through Kansas City. And so anyway, long story short, Bob Geigel, he went to Iowa. He wrestled at Iowa and almost went to college to play football there. And he followed my career, my high school career. I was, you know, All-American in three sports. And almost went to Iowa. And Iowa was after me to go there. And he, like I said, he followed my athletic career in high school. And he knew who I was. So long story short, when I finished college, I was looking for somebody to train me. And I talked to a couple of people and they directed me toward, that's where I live, and directed me towards Bob Geigel. And did a little research, found his phone number, called him up, and talked to him for a few minutes. Yeah, he knew who I was when I called him. And so we set something up to where I could meet, and we can get together and start training, and that's what we did.
Definitely. Now, also, you know, you debuted in 1987 for Central States Wrestling before moving to the AWA under the ring name of Curtis the Cat Hughes. Did your training really prepare you for that moment of truth that when you went out there saying, you know, hey, this is a live crowd, there's no turning back? Were you prepared on your first day?
Oh, yeah. Bob Geigel, you know, he was Sonny Myers and Pat O'Connor. They worked with us. And they got us together. I mean, they got us ready, basically, you know. And you know, and like I was trained by old timers, okay. And I try to keep that old time style of training alive when I train my students. And so, you know, the method that Geigel and Sonny Myers and Pat O'Connor taught was something that stuck, you know. And I learned real fast. I never got out of the ring. I was there every day. Even when I got a pulled a muscle, I was always there. So I didn't miss too many days. So, you know, right from the get-go, you know, they already pretty much told me that, you know, I was what's called a natural. I just need to be taught how to do it. And Geigel, you know, was a tough old bird, Lord rest his soul, him and Ted O'Connor and Sonny Myers. They were good teachers, and I'm trying to carry on what they taught me.
Definitely. Now, fast forward a little bit. When you made it to the WWF, you had a feud between you and The Undertaker. Now, what was it like working possibly with The Undertaker at such an early stage of his career, seeing, you know, the longevity he has had today?
Well, I'll tell you, man, it was a hell of a rush, that's for sure, and I was so blessed to get in that spot, you know, because a lot of guys were in line to work with him. And I guess Vince McMahon saw something in me that that would help get the match over or whatever the case may be. But working with the Undertaker was a dream come true to me. I mean, it's hard to explain. You know, I mean, it's something, you work so hard at something, and then the reward is, you know, you get the top dog in the shed. Mm-hmm. So you get to work with the top dog in the shed, and when that happened, you know, that kind of catapulted my career a lot, and so I had to really sit down and get myself, as far as business-wise, minded together, and that's what I did. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, working with the Undertaker, you know, was a big pleasure, and it helped my career a great deal.
Definitely. Now, like I said earlier, too, you've worked everywhere, including Eastern Championship Wrestling in 1993, which in your time there was renamed to Extreme Championship Wrestling in 94. Was there a lot of talk backstage with why they were changing the name? And maybe what were your initial thoughts about it? Because, you know, it's not every day a promotion will just up and change their name.
Well, what happened with that was, you know, at first, you know, it was, you know, Eastern Championship Wrestling. You knew that, of course. And I guess at the time, you know, when I was, and Paul, he called me to, you know, let me know he was starting up that particular company, you know, asked me, you know, if I was interested and so forth and so on. And he was starting up, you know, young guys like Taz and Sandman and Tommy Dreamer and, you know, just a whole slew of other young guys that you know, did something in wrestling in the future. But at that time, they were still kind of training in the back at DCW Arena. But when those guys got trained, I believe they wanted to make it a little more extreme. That's why they call it Extreme Championship Wrestling. What I mean by extreme, they wanted to be a little more violent, a little more crazier than what was going on at the time on WWF. So, you know, people started watching it because it was different. And just like in MMA, you know, when that came out, people started watching it because it was different. And that was the deal with ECW when they changed from Eastern to Extreme. That's when they decided, okay, we're going to start going through tables. We're going to start busting up each other with bottles and working on tacks and all that foolishness, you know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, my thing was just the wrestle. I wasn't down with all that. And so that's the reason why, you know, I wasn't there that long, because I wasn't down for all that, man. You know what I'm saying? I'm a wrestler, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a wrestler, so.
Sure. Now, between, you know, WCW, WWE, ECW, was there one, I mean, that you liked the most or that you enjoyed the most?
Yeah, WWF was the best one because, I mean, you had more, it was more perks involved, and they did more traveling overseas, and, you know, it was just a better deal, you
sure.
know.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, royalties and all that good stuff, you know. So, you know, WWF was the better deal, so.
Oh, yeah, definitely. A lot of people don't get to see or hear much about what goes on backstage or after the show, but did you have any close friends while working at any of these companies, anybody that you stayed in contact with?
Oh, yeah, you know, me and Ron Simmons, you know, we got pretty close, and, you know, we hung out all the time, used to go fishing, and, of course, a few of them are not here anymore, so. But other than that, you know, yeah, Ron Simmons was pretty much me, him and Junkyard Dog.
Sure.
Used to hang out and, you know, go fishing and talking, whatever you want to say. But, yeah, those pretty much the only two that was close to.
Sure. And, you know, I have to ask, too, with close friends come arch enemies. Did you ever have a colleague who was maybe just difficult to work with, or maybe you just didn't see eye to eye with a lot?
Well, I had, you know, a couple of them, but we got it straightened out after a night, after addressing the situation. You know, that happens with anybody.
Sure,
when you come in as a young piece of talent, they're going to try it and see, you know, see if you got the balls to stand up to them. And I passed the test, and, you know, But it wasn't that major.
Sure,
you know.
Sure, yeah. Now,
yeah, it all panned out.
Definitely. Now, you know, we're based out of Poughkeepsie, New York, and we're so lucky to have the Mid-Hudson Civic Center up here in Poughkeepsie as our home base for pro wrestling. Do you have any memories of working in Poughkeepsie or at least anywhere in the Northeast maybe you could tell us about?
Well, I'll be honest with you. That was so long ago, and back in those days, I used to party like a rock star.
No problem.
So a lot of those memories are not there, because sometimes I'm on shows and people come to me and say, "Yeah, you remember when so and so and so and so and so and so?" I'm looking at them like they're crazy, you know. So, yeah, but I mean, I remember a lot of things, you know, fun things I did up north, up around Jersey, New York, Philly area. You know, I did a lot of fun things, but the thing. A lot of fun things I don't think I should be talking about on the radio.
Definitely. Now, you also wore the hat of a trainer for WWA4. Did you ever think during your career that you would turn around and be a trainer as well?
Well, of course. Yeah, that was the plan. I mean, you know, when they gave me a call, when Frank gave me a call, and you know, he's looking for somebody to take a spot at the WWA for. And, of course, I answered the call. And, you know, of course, when I got there, I didn't have no experience teaching. So I had to learn as I went, you know.
Sure.
And once I did figure it out, you know, then I had it up under my belt as far as how to teach fundamentals and add what I've taught along with a few other things. You know, to teach guys how to do this stuff, and it worked out, you know. And so after 14 years of teaching young men and women how to wrestle, you know, thousands of them, I trained thousands of them. Mm. And, of course, there's a couple in the WWE, and there's one in TNA, and then there's one all over. They're all over the place. Let's put it like that.
Sure, definitely. You
know, and so I'm proud of what they're doing out there. And, you know, I'm proud of Heath Slater. He's second-time tag team champion. He's having a good run up there, and I talked to him the other day, and, you know, he's happy as he could be, and we talked and talked about when he first came in there and you know, started from the bottom right here, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And then, of course, Apollo Crews, he's up there.
Yeah.
He's doing his thing, getting a serious push. And, of course, Moose, he's in TNA. Mm-hmm. He's doing his thing up there in TNA, and Jonathan Gresham, he does some stuff with Ring of Honor. And, of course, Kara Hogan, you know, she's getting looked at by WWE. She's a good, talented young lady. And so, you know, I train thousands of people, and, you know, every day and that, you know, mm-hmm. I teach people. I pray every day that they make it. You know?
Yeah, that's definitely an impressive list of students you had there. But what would you say, what's the biggest piece of advice you give your students maybe on day one? Is there anything you like to always tell them about before you get into it all?
Oh, yeah, you know, I pretty much tell them, you know, if you want to be successful in the wrestling game, you know, time is a big, big, big issue, man, you know. And a lot of people think that they have plenty of time, mm-hmm. you see. And wrestling years are like dog years, you feel me?
Yeah.
They go by pretty fast.
Yep.
So some people think they got a lifetime to drag your feet to be a wrestler. When you make your mind up as a young person, okay, to be a wrestler, right, you have to find you a good trainer, okay, and get to the freaking building and train every day. Mm-hmm. You can't come in once in a while. You're not going to be a wrestler. Here's the thing. You got a lot of guys out here call themselves being trainers, trying to so-called teach people how to wrestle, and they don't know hammerlock from a friggin', you know, wrist lock, okay?
Yep.
And it's all, and it's basically just a, you know, how to make, it's a money, make money gimmick, you know, and I don't work like that.
Yeah.
Every person I try to teach, okay, is to try to make it. That's it. That's how I do it. I mean, I'm not going to train you if you ain't got the heart or if you ain't got the freaking hungriness, you know, to work at it and make it, you know.
Definitely.
And that's just how I roll, man. I mean, I have a passion for it. I love professional wrestling. I've been doing it almost 30 years. Mm-hmm. All right. When I see a young man walk down that aisle on TNA or WWE, okay, that makes me feel great.
Definitely.
Right?
Yeah, definitely. Now, one last thing, too. For the fans out there who've known you, you know, you lost a lot of weight, too. You went from about, I think, what, 400 pounds down to 250. You're in incredible shape. What motivated you to drop the weight, and how did you do it?
Well, you know, I mean, what motivated me to drop it, because I didn't want to have a drop from a heart attack or a stroke, you know, because I see a lot of guys that, you know, are overweight, you know, and if they're not on a regular, you know, workout plan, and all they're doing is just eating and carrying on, I mean, you know, you're gonna get fat, you're gonna get out of shape, you're gonna catch a heart attack. And I thought about all that, you understand? And so I just decided to, you know, stop partying, drinking beer, and eating garbage, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I just cut it all out and just started, you know, because I've been an athlete all my life, so I know how to work out and lift weights, see?
Yeah.
And the thing I did was I'd come in the gym, I'd stretch, I'd hit the weights first. This is my routine I'm giving you, what I did, mm-hmm. to get all that weight off. I'd come in, I'd stretch, I'd hit the weights real hard. I'd hit the freaking weights. Mm-hmm. And then after I did the weights, then I'd ride the Stairmaster. I remember the first day I tried it, I couldn't even ride it, you know, 30 seconds, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I'll push myself.
Sure.
I'll push myself. Every day I got 5 minutes and added five, and then added five next year, I was riding for an hour. But here's the funny part. Every day when I would get done at that Stairmaster, it looked like it rained over there. It's like it looked like somebody might have poked a hole in the belly and all this water ran out, right?
Yep.
And, of course, there was a lot of fat on that floor. And then after I did the Stairmaster, then I went into the steamer, the sauna, okay? Mm-hmm. You know, hot sauna?
Yep.
And I would spend 2 hours in and out of a hot sauna. I'd get in there and get the sweating, and then I'd jump in the shower for a couple of seconds, then go back and get in. I did that for 2 hours and sweating it all off. I worked out and sweat. That's why when people looked at me, they said, man, you want a juice or something? You know, and I was drug free. I never used no freaking steroids or anything. I just went in the freaking gym with a plan. I stopped eating garbage. I stopped because I used to eat pizza, and chili dogs, everything, garbage, drink beer, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And that's how I gained all that weight in the first place. And so when I cut all that out and started eating healthy and eating right and working out, that's how it all came off.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, that's great. Great to hear Mr. Hughes. Once again, everybody, please check out ESSpromotions.com. He's going to be in the area on October 14th to the 16th. Great talking with you. Now, are you in the social media age? Can people follow you, or where can people keep up with you these days?
Yeah. I have a wrestling school in Atlanta now. Mm-hmm. It's called Total Protection Mr. Hughes Wrestling School. It's at 640. Highway 138 in Riverdale, Georgia. The phone number is 404-664-2827. And, of course, my email, if you want to email Mr. Hughes, is MrHughesTheBull@yahoo.com. If you want to be a professor of wrestling, go to that email and send me an email or Facebook, Curtis Hughes. Yeah, to find me, you'll see my mugshot right there with the WWE emblem right there. So I'm not hard to find. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I said, you want a book, Mr. Hughes? Go to, you know, all that information, you can find me.
Perfect. Once again, Mr. Hughes, thank you so much for taking your time out to join us today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
This is your Olympic hero, Kurt Angle. And you're listening to another wrestling podcast in association with CelebVM. Order a personal video message from me and many other wrestlers and celebrities now. Oh, it's true. It's damn true.
That's right. Head on over to CelebVM.com/AWP.
Get a personal video message for yourself or as a gift for someone else. For personal connections, shout-outs, birthdays, proposals, weddings, and much more. Enter your details about yourself so the celebrity can record a personal video message especially for you, including details such as your name, age, birthday, hobbies, or whatever else you include. As soon as the video has been recorded, you'll get an email with your link so you can share it on social media or download and keep it. Celebrities record videos as and when they can, usually within 2 weeks. But if you want a video for a specific date and it does not look like it will arrive in time, you can cancel it and get an instant refund at the click of a button. There are hundreds of celebrities to choose from and many more joining every day. Search by category or genre. Buy a gift voucher, get updates and offers, and encourage your favorite celebrities to join so they can connect with fans in a fun and unique way. Raise money for their charities and much more. So order your video now for yourself or for someone else.
Celebrity Video Messages and Another Wrestling Podcast team up. Be sure to head on over to celebvm.com/AWP. All right, once again, thanks to Mr. Hughes. Guys, once again, if you love this interview, please head on over to anotherwrestlingpodcast.com. You can check out all of our other interviews we've had on. And hey, if you missed an interview during a show, please check out our YouTube page, youtube.com/anotherwrestlingpod. You can find just the interviews on our YouTube page and much more.
All right, Credo. I love the interview with Mr. Hughes, one of the great bodyguards in the history of professional wrestling. But now that we're on the topic, let's delve in a little bit more now, shall we?
All right.
All right. Let's throw some notables out there just for the goof. I mean, from the old days, from when I first started watching, there are guys like, oh, God, Bob Orton watching Piper's Back.
Big Bubba Rogers for Jim Cornette.
Oh, my God. That's a good
one. Really old.
God, okay, how about this one? Let's go a little newer. Let's go 911 when he was Paul Heyman's bodyguard in ECW.
The guy doesn't get a lot of credit. How about, you know, even the APA, the Acolytes Protection Agency was even bodyguards for certain people. Not necessarily what we're thinking about bodyguards, but still in the same arena.
The only bodyguards we know who are allowed to drink on the job.
That's it. And then, you know, even like more notable ones too, like Diesel. Diesel started off as Shawn Michaels' bodyguard, which later turned into, you know, more dominant role as a wrestler. But, you know, I think just the whole bodyguard aspect has been a staple in professional wrestling for many years. There's been tons out there. But, you know, briefly, one of your favorites, HBK, I believe, had the most bodyguards in the history. Can you name a lot of his bodyguards?
I wouldn't know if they had the most in the history. And some of these you might not even want to consider bodyguards. But let's be frank. He had Diesel Kevin Nash.
Yeah.
He had Psycho Sid.
Yeah.
Luna Vachon, I don't know if you would consider her a bodyguard, but
she's crazy, man.
Yeah, she could have kicked my ass, so I'm going to throw her in there. In the DX days, you had Rick Rude and China.
Yeah, China was a bodyguard, yeah.
You know? Then he had someone like Sherry as a valet. I mean, that doesn't really count. And Jose Lothario was a manager. You know, we always think of Shawn Michaels as one of these guys who liked to – who's always in the spotlight, but he always had – not always, but earlier on in his career, especially through his first run as the champion, until that happened, I mean, he always had somebody in his corner until he didn't need it no more.
And you said Sherry probably wouldn't count as a bodyguard. Dude, I would totally – she was like borderline valet meets bodyguard meets just crazy ass because, you know, she was definitely, I think, up there because, you know, she would definitely help out like bodyguards and stuff to where – but it was like borderline bodyguard meets valet. So yeah, I would definitely strike that up as fair enough for her to meet that the quota of that. So
a great Shawn Michaels moment here when one of his bodyguards – almost killed one of his managers. And you know what I'm talking about, Survivor Series in the Garden.
That's right.
Oh, God, who can forget when Sid stole the camera out of the cameraman's hand and threw it in Jose Lothario's chest, and he fell off the apron, and you thought he was going to die. I'm sitting there laughing my ass off.
Oh,
my
man. That was a
That's
moment.
That's not funny. That's not funny. I'm like, yeah, it is.
Oh, man. Definitely. You know, but just speaking about this, you know, even we just talked to Mr. Hughes, you know, he was a bodyguard, turned wrestler. You know, he even came back years later to be the bodyguard of Chris Jericho. So that was kind of fun. So, you know, it's almost like, you know, you have valets, you have managers, you have bodyguards. You know, they're just another staple in the pro wrestling universe. I think there's one guy you want to talk about, though, because I always see it on social media. I'll let you bring him up, though, because I know you want to bring him up. I know what's happening.
Can we just talk about the V-Man, Big V, the King of the Jungle, Big Virgil?
Now, here's a guy
who... King of the Meat Sauce, you know, getting that fuck money.
That's it, and that's the thing is, like, he was a guy too. Some of these guys turned wrestlers, and I feel like some of them never needed to turn to a wrestler to where, you know, he was predominantly, you know, just the help, if you will, of Million Dollar Man.
Yeah, but he was also booked as that man. He was that bodyguard And it was very different because he wasn't like, you obviously go out and you pay your bodyguard. I get that. But they made it look like he was like more than just the hire to help. I mean, they really pushed that line.
Yeah.
You know, in a sense where you couldn't get away with that shit today. You know, I mean, and the story about when they broke apart, when he finally became a wrestler, I mean, he had that match with Ted DiBiase in WrestleMania 7, which then carried over to him actually winning the Million Dollar Championship at SummerSlam 91. I mean, that was just a great, great storyline. And Roddy Piper played a big part of that storyline. But here's an interesting fact about Virgil. How many people have held the Million Dollar Championship?
Ooh. Well,
you had Ted DiBiase.
Yep.
You had Virgil. You had the Ringmaster.
Yeah.
You had Ted DiBiase Jr. Am I missing anybody? I feel like I'm missing somebody. Probably not.
Well, if he is, tweet at a wrestling POD. Let us know who we missed. But yeah, what else?
Here's the point I want to make. Virgil is the first and probably only person to ever win that belt.
Yeah, it's true. A lot of it was just given to them.
They were just
giving
it to him. They gave it to Ted DiBiase. Virgil won it. He's the first person to win it. I know DiBiase won it back, but then it was just given to Steve Austin, and then it was just given to Ted DiBiase Jr. So let's put Big Virgil in the Hall of Fame, the best bodyguard there was. NWO, just let's go Big Virgil.
Now, Cooter, while you talked about that, I went to our trusty friend Google and looked up who held the Million Dollar Championship.
Okay.
Well, days held by Ted DiBiase was 922. Virgil actually held it for 77 days.
Yep.
Back to Ted DiBiase for another 88, and then it was abandoned. And then the Ringmaster had it for 152 days, and then it was abandoned. And then Ted DiBiase Jr. had it for 224 days, and then it was abandoned yet again. So,
who's the smartest mark in the world, baby?
You're right,
Angry
man.
Angry Cooter.
You're right. So there you go. You don't need Google when you have Angry Cooter on the show. But, hey, man, that's it goes up there. Another bodyguard who made it, you know, made a big career for just being a bodyguard. It's amazing. It's amazing. Now, do you think briefly, you know, in today's day and age, we could have more bodyguards? I mean, and I'm talking about, you know, like valets or managers, to where they don't need to be a wrestler at the end of the day. Just have a guy who comes out and is what it is. He's your bodyguard, to where, you know, he saves you from people coming in or whatnot. And and that's it. Like, he's not going to have a match next week on Superstars. You know what I mean? No matches. He's just a bodyguard. Could that happen?
Yeah, but
in this day and age?
How often are these bodyguards, even back in the day? I mean, they started as bodyguards, but then a lot of them became wrestlers down the road. You know who would be perfect in that fit, if you ask me?
What's that?
Oh, God. Baron Corbin would be great for that. I mean,
yeah, definitely. Yeah, I see.
Oh, he would be the perfect bodyguard. You know, he doesn't have to have a match. He's just so physically intimidating. I mean, and his finisher is amazing. I mean, come on. I mean, if he was to have a match after, like, you know, a month or two, you know what I mean? Like, just occasionally, it would be perfect for him. You know, we don't have to expose him as much because he's still a little green, but I dig him, man. I really think he's going someplace.
No, yeah, definitely. And, you know, even – I remember even WCW days. Remember when Hulk Hogan brought in the Disciple?
God. That's so terrible.
That's like a bodyguard, right? I mean, he was – I don't know, in the beginning, but
– Oh, God. That's almost as bad as, like,
Brutus.
Tyson Tomko. No, Tyson Tomko was – he was an okay bodyguard. Until he started robbing CVS's for Oxy, but whatever. That's another show, ladies and gentlemen.
Was it getting paid enough from the WWE for being a bodyguard, I guess? So, regardless, though, you know, there's only so much you could talk about bodyguards, but maybe you guys out there can let us know. Facebook.com/AnotherWrestlingPodcast. Tweet us at @AWrestlingPOD. Just head on over to AnotherWrestlingPodcast.com. You'll find all these links and more. Let us know what you think. Maybe there's somebody we left out who was a most notable bodyguard out there. Let us know who we left out. But I think I don't know much more we could talk about bodyguards. We're at another wrestling pay-per-view, a WWE pay-per-view, a special, whatever you want to call it, network special. is this week. I feel like we just did this a week and a half ago.
I know, really. Enough is enough.
This brand split, man, it's good in some ways, but at the same time, it's like, don't get me wrong. I would love watching pay-per-view every weekend, but at the same time, it's like, just let's get a little bit of a breather in between. As per usual, when they would have a show, we would do, a little special and talk about the whole pay-per-view coming up, the card, the whole card, top to bottom, what our thoughts are. But I'm not going to do this every other week, man. That's what it's turning into. It's every other week. How can we turn this around and just give a few thoughts? I mean, maybe let's just pick apart the best things that could happen this weekend, maybe, and not every match.
Okay. All right. Well, what are you looking forward to on the card?
Yeah, honestly, top to bottom, I'm curious about the Ziggler-Miz match. I mean, that right there, it's the career on the line for Dolph Ziggler. And they don't just have career on the line matches for fun. You know what I mean? Like, when they have a career on the line match, it could be 50-50, but it's pretty much 90-10 that he's leaving Sunday. So I don't know. I'm kind of hoping to watch it to where we see the upset of Ziggler actually winning the IC belt off of Miz. But deep down inside me, I don't know. I think this is the end of Dolph Ziggler.
I don't think so, man. I think Dolph is it's a shame that he has to persevere and finally, break through with a mid-card title. But, I mean, I guess you got to start winning somewhere. I mean, we just had him in a main event in the first SmackDown pay-per-view, jobbing to Dean Ambrose.
Yeah.
Clean. Like, I'm like, okay.
No, that was SummerSlam.
Was that SummerSlam?
It was SummerSlam, baby.
Oh, God.
It felt like it, but the first pay-per-view they had, AJ Styles won the championship. So, yeah.
That's right. Okay.
But that's the thing, though. I mean, what does Ziggler have to stay for? I mean, they took his career, right after WrestleMania 29, he cashed it in. The crowd loved him. He was hot, and then he gets a freaking concussion, and then he had to drop the belt, and it was just a downward spiral to where I feel like they couldn't just trust him again. But man, he is like, he's like one of the only guys that could sell like a chocolate popsicle to a lady in white gloves. This guy knows the business. He can wrestle. He could talk. He could do it all. There's nothing about him that bothers me. What bothers me is that creative had nothing to give for this guy. I mean, it was like Mr. Perfect meets maybe a little bit of Shawn Michaels in a blender, and maybe it touches somebody else. But it's like, man, what a worker. Why'd they waste him?
Yeah, he's just one of those classic mid-card guys who was just almost there. And, his career sort of reminds me of, like, Jake Roberts in a way. Not stylistically, but in terms of, like, he's always, like, that guy who you kind of got to get through to get to the top guy. You know what I mean? Like, Jake always used to say, hey, man, I used to school guys for Hogan. Yeah. Get them ready. I mean, like, That's what his job was, to make them look good, and then they would go on to that next guy and, just progress from there. I mean, I would hate to see him go. I think he's winning the title. But let me throw you out what I'm looking forward to this, and you're going to call me crazy. I got a feeling that either Becky versus Alexa Bliss or Nikki versus Carmella could be a top two match, because the match of the night is going to be the triple threat.
Well, you just said it right there, too. There's two matches, two women's matches on a card, and that's mind-blowing in itself.
Yeah, but one of them is going to end up on the fucking pre-show.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
You know that.
No Mercy, brought to you by Nikki Bella versus Carmella.
Versus Carmella in a bra and panties match. Woo-woo!
I think that's the thing, is that these women they're getting more time now. And that's what's kind of good about these pay-per-views, having, like, it's a SmackDown brand pay-per-view than a Raw brand pay-per-view, to where I think the last SmackDown pay-per-view ended at like 10:30, like that. They did all these matches, and it's kind of good because all the matches had a lot more time than usual, to where if it was both rosters, something's getting cut, something's getting pushed back, or, there just wasn't enough time. But now they all kind of get a decent time to shine, especially these women. They're going to have a decent amount of time, I think, for each match. So they'll definitely get that spotlight,
And in all seriousness, I mean, quite honestly, I said it earlier, I love the fact that we have two women's matches on this card, because, I mean, it shows that we're building, the division outside of the title, unlike Raw. And it's not in a cheesy, like, 4-on-4, tag team match, just for the piss break. I mean, this has been a feud. This is something that they've been building up for a few weeks. I mean, Nikki Bella put in all that work, especially during her last title reign. And Carmella is just an up and comer, and these two, you know, they look magical together.
Yep. And I mean, yeah, definitely. You know what, too? We really don't have to talk much about this, but Heath Slater and Rhino versus the Usos. Is Heath's 15 minutes just about up with this championship, or what do you think?
You know what? It's so sad because I really like him.
Yeah.
And he's so over. I mean, I get it. The Usos, you know, badasses, new attitude, you know, we're going to take what's ours type of thing. But, like, why have the longest reigning WWE tag team champions and then just have these belts switch after every pay-per-view? Because didn't they just win them in the last pay-per-view special?
Yeah.
So, I mean, they got to have some sort of a reign. Otherwise, you know, the whole thing with Heath Slater going back and forth between Raw and SmackDown for a job means nothing.
Well, yeah, that's pretty much it. You know, it's almost turning into a little rundown of the whole show, but just two more brief things. I'm done with No Mercy.
Okay.
Bray Wyatt versus Randy Orton. Now, hear me out. This is just going to be a quick thing. I love Bray for years. I loved him, you know, when he started doing these promos and then just the character they were building with him. But now, man, I'll tell you what, I fast forward through all of his promos because they've turned him into such a jobber that I don't want to listen to him anymore. You know, the guy, don't get me wrong, he's great on the mic. You know, he's great in the ring. He is a character for WWE, and it's a shame that they haven't, you know, given him what's due to him. You know, the man's the pay-per-view matches are, you know, one year he fought Cena, the next year he fought The Undertaker, like, this guy you're not going to use that much? Like, come on. This guy deserves a push for all the stuff he's been doing. And the thing is, you know, his slogan was, I'm the eater of worlds, the face of fear, the new face of fear.
I am a god, and I have been jobbing at every pay-per-view. I literally did a job to a 50-year-old Kane last month.
That's the thing. And this one is almost like you're damned if you do, damned if you don't, because if Orton loses, okay, he lost to Brock at SummerSlam, now he's losing to Bray, and he just came back. So it's like, does he need some kind of winning momentum for this, or is he beyond that to just lose again? And for Bray, he's been, you know, losing a lot, losing quite a lot, and now do you make him job again to Orton? Because if you look at these two guys on paper, Orton is, you know, the legend, the you know, the veteran, and Bray is still kind of the new guy, even though I know he's been there for a few years. But you know what I mean? Compared to Orton's career and Bray's career, Bray's still the new guy. Bray should be winning this match, in my opinion, to where I think he needs that boost a lot more than Orton does. So that's the thing, man. I haven't watched any of their promos backstage because I'm like, no, I just, until you show me a reason why Bray is, you know, should be dealt with, like, you know, he's like a bad guy. He's like, whatever he is, then I'll start watching the promos. And I feel bad because he's so great on the mic, but at the same time, it's I keep getting sick of how they use him. You know what I mean? That's pretty much it.
My problem with this build-up has been like, all right, we got to a point where Orton has to be the Predator and go backstage and do these. Like, did you see him on the Titantron this week, you know, cutting that stupid promo like he was Bray Wyatt? It's just like, oh, my God. Yeah, I was just like, I couldn't scrub my finger fast enough to fast forward that shit.
But that's basically the whole sums up that match to where, you know, what both of these guys need or what they've done and what they can do with them. So I don't know.
You realize what we just said right here. We basically just said we are looking forward to both women's matches, but Bray versus Orton will be our piss break.
Oh, man, what a sad day it has become.
I know.
And, you know, another thing, too, is that there's, like, two other matches we're not going to talk about or whatnot. There's, like, another match, but it's okay because I think the main thing to really talk about is Cena versus Ambrose versus AJ. You know, the biggest news out of this could happen is that Cena could win and tie Ric Flair's 16-time championship reign. But I do not see that happening. I think AJ is holding that championship till at least the Rumble to only gain it back at Mania, or he's losing it at Mania. He is not losing that belt anytime soon. I don't see any reason why for him to do it.
Let me ask you a question. Do you care more about Cena breaking Ric Flair's record or The New Day breaking Demolition's record.
Well, I would definitely say Cena. I would like to see him, I definitely think Ric Flair's record should be broken. But, Demolition, like, nobody cares. Just pass those belts on to somebody else. Like, nobody's has a calendar and says, ooh, here's the day that they tie them or beat them. I'm like, no, just stop. Cena could walk away with 16. I don't think that's happening. Ambrose is only in this match as a nod that he was a champion, so he's just filler, pretty much. I don't think he'll ever be touching World Championship gold for a long time. He's definitely out of that little bracket. So more or less, it's more of a courtesy to him to be in this match. But yeah, man, I think AJ Styles is going to be holding on to that championship for a very long time. There is no need to get rid of it. And you know what? Just to put a spoiler on this too, because Cena is actually going to be taking some time off to film American Grit 2. So he's not going to be on TV, so he's not winning the championship.
Rats.
Anyway, you know, we said we weren't going to talk every match. Maybe we'll do a Facebook Live video this Sunday. You guys can tune in on Facebook.com/AnotherWrestlingPodcast. We'll be on there. I don't know what time. Who cares? Just look for us. We'll probably announce it sometime. But yeah, I mean, we got to do something about this. It's every other week about a pay-per-view. So we'll have to think of something, how we'll wrangle it up each time there's a pay-per-view. And we'll figure that out. But it's been quite the ride, Cooter, again.
Yo, dude, what's going on here? You know, I just Googled Ric Flair's name, and the first thing that comes up says he said he slept with Halle Berry? What the hell is going on in the world of professional wrestling? He's like 70, smashing hot chicks still. Good for Flair.
So, yeah, this, apparently he brought up that, he did stuff with her. She rode Space Mountain. I doubt that's even true, because I think from what they said around the time was probably around 97. A little bit younger Flair, but at the same time, she was a lot younger, and there's no way I doubt, like, why? They didn't, like, work in a movie or anything, like, all of a sudden, it's just, you know, he was probably drunk, saw this girl that probably looked like Halle Berry, and that was the end of the story, you know what I mean? So it could have been Shaniqua from Louisiana, for all we know.
Oh, my God, this is ridiculous.
So, yeah, Ric Flair, man, regardless if it's true or not, I won't want to.
I'm gonna call him if that's true, I'm calling him the 17-time world champion.
17-time world champion. how do you keep going on with that, guys? Ladies and gentlemen, each and every week, it's another wrestling podcast.